providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the weekend edition of the KE Report, and in this segment with a even more dedicated focus on the resource sector, not just on the precious metals or gold and silver as I did with Doc in the last segment. I am chatting with Sean Broderick. He is an analyst over at Weiss Ratings. Now, Sean, let's talk about gold, and I want a more big picture view from you in terms of what the major drivers are going to be for this precious metal. Over this whole month, there's been geopolitical events that have driven moves in the metals, especially in gold. But these geopolitical things are so short-lived and I think cloud the more long-term picture between what drivers you see, either up or down, for the precious metal here. What do you think? What are some of the main factors that you think longer-term investors need to focus on when investing, or really just deciding to invest in gold?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think people who are purchasing gold because the coronavirus is now raging, you know, they're buying it for the wrong reasons. I mean, as far as we know, gold doesn't cure some kind of viral contagion, so that's the wrong reason to buy it. But as you said, it clouds the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is that the central banks of the world are going to print money from here to kingdom come. In fact, the Congressional Budget Office said Tuesday that America's national deficit and debt are both surging. They expect the deficit to rise above $1 trillion in 2020, and debt held by the public is projected to reach 98% of GDP by 2030. That is printing to infinity. And if you create more paper currency, in this case it's electronic currency, but it's the same thing, you know, I mean, that tends to make the value of real assets get much stronger because you need more paper currency to buy those real assets. So I think that's the big story in gold, that and the old supply demand thing. I mean, we are kind of reaching the end of the rope for easy to find high grade deposits. They can find more deposits, but they're the stuff they used to drive over in order to get to the richer stuff that they mined out now. So, you know, it's going to be more expensive to mine, even if you're using robots, which is a big change that is coming into the area. So supply and demand, just money creation by the central banks around the world as they try to paper over all the problems in the world. These are the things people should be looking at. I think these are big long-term trends, and so you don't have to chase anything, but I think that you can definitely buy the pullbacks.
Okay, yeah, and I think central bank policy is crucial here, and even the Fed policy, that seems to be one of the biggest drivers, at least recently, and just look what it took for gold to finally break out of that 6 to 7 year range that it was in, was the Fed actually starting to cut rates, and then even starting to expand its balance sheet. It hadn't done that for a number of years, and I think that's one of the things that has really sparked this fire under gold and caused it to finally break out above that just short of 1400 level, and now even set up a higher trading range. But then when we dive into the stocks here, it seems like the majors and the miners are doing well. Royalty and streaming companies were shooting up even before the breakout in gold happened. But the money hasn't really flown down to juniors in a broad sense. If you're selective, you can still do very well. But how are you playing the stocks? Because I know you're not just focused on simply the metal here.
No, that is another good point you're raising, which basically boils down to the miners as a group are underperforming what's happening in the metals. I think many people believe that this rally is short term. They expect that, well, they're already working on some kind of vaccine for the coronavirus. So, you know, that'll be rolling out in the next few months probably. So people see the rally in gold as short term. So we are seeing the most miners not perform as well. That said, individual names are doing quite well. I mean, we have a DRD Gold in Supercycle Investor, for example, and that one's up nicely. I don't know if you know about what that company does, but basically it has all the old tailing piles in like South Africa to work with. It doesn't run actual mines. It just reprocesses those old tailings and so it can do that rather cheaply. And as the price of like gold goes higher, you know, things get better and get looking better and better for that company. Other ones we have in like gold and silver trader, you know, some are just very strongly. So you have to think, Sandstorm Gold, since you mentioned one of the streamers, you know, that thing's been on a tear. And so I think individual names can help you out quite a bit. You just have to be really selective. And it's not just producers, by the way. Explorers can do well. One reason that you might want to look at explorers is that as a group, of course, we're always talking about things as a group, but as a group, explorers haven't really participated in the rally yet. And so when the next big rally in gold comes, presumably explorers could do extraordinarily well. I just profiled one on wealthwave.com. That's wealth-wave.com, which is called Core Mining. And that's exploring out in California, has some projects that the big mining companies didn't know what to do with. And it has a great team, and you know, it's up strongly today. And I think individual names are the way to go in this area right now, because I expect we'll see a pullback in gold, and miners will probably feel the worst of that. But you know that next move higher is coming. So if you are positioned in those companies that, you know, have very strong fundamentals and are just really leveraged to that next move, I think that's a real winning move to make.
So when you say leverage to that next move in gold, does that mean you're looking at deposits that might be considered marginal right now, or deposits that are trying to be expanded? How do you see a project or a company being leveraged to gold? Because in all fairness, I feel like almost every gold explorer seems to say that they're leveraged to the gold price.
Right. Well, that's actually a great question. Those companies that are those producers, I should say, that are marginally profitable now, those will probably see the biggest boost, because as the price of gold goes higher, you know, then they suddenly start to look much, much better. They're only barely making it right now. Suddenly they have big fat profits rolling in. They'll look great. Those companies with exploration upside, and this is where the explorers can really play to their strengths. You know, I mean, if you know that they're doing some drilling, working on some stuff, maybe they're drilling out a piece of land right next to the deposit they already know about, because the point's going to come when the big miners want to add more ounces in the ground, because they haven't been doing the exploration, and the way that they do it now, as I'm sure you know, they buy those explorers and the small producers with real blue sky on their deposits. And so look for that. I mean, Silvercrest, for example, that's one we own, that's in gold and silver trader. And an interesting thing just came out, by the way. Kitco handed out its award for the best mining CEO. And number one was Keith Neumeyer of First Majestic Silver, which we also have known. But number two was Eric Fear of Silvercrest, because the stuff that company is finding, it's just extraordinary. They had an initial estimate, but they're doing more drilling, and the drilling's coming back at higher grades than the initial estimate, and just a richer deposit generally. So look for that kind of thing. I think those companies, let's call it upside surprise, those companies that hold the potential for an upside surprise, once the gold fever really starts, we're in a bull market again, I believe, but we don't have gold fever yet. Once the gold fever really starts, you're going to see these companies with upside surprise potential, I think, do extraordinarily well.
All right, Sean, I also want to talk about a couple other precious metals that I don't discuss all that much, but have been running. One that comes up a fair bit more on our site is palladium. That one has been moving nicely. It's over $2,000 at about $2,200 to $2,300 right now, and that has been moving aggressively higher without many pullbacks in the last couple of years. Also rhodium. Rhodium's up almost at $10,000. That's been a very aggressive move. I feel like there's a little bit more interest in palladium rather than rhodium, but what's your thought on some of these other precious metals that just have been screaming higher?
Well, yes, and if we're going to talk about the palladium rally, let's just take a brief pause to feel pity for the car companies, because the rally in palladium last year cost the world's car companies $18 billion. You know, they need it. They absolutely need it for the catalytic converters. They could engineer things, but it hasn't hit the price yet where it's painful enough that they want to do something else. They could use silver, for that matter, if they really wanted to. But again, that's a massive engineering undertaking, and they aren't going to do it yet. Now, there is a supply-demand gap in palladium. It's lasted for 8 years. This year, we're probably going to see it fall short again. And normally the gap is just made up by Russia. They have the world's largest palladium supplier there, and it has a huge stockpile, or supposedly it has one. And normally they cover the gap, but they haven't this year. I mean, in November, the company said it would release 300,000 to 500,000 ounces from the supply in the midterm, but gave no definition of what midterm means. I think that scares a lot of people. They don't know when Norilsk Nickel is actually going to push forward with that palladium. When it happens, by the way, that's probably going to be the next big correction in palladium. But if you're looking at the longer-term supply-demand picture, that's a dip you want to buy, because really, the world's car companies do not want to go through the tremendous engineering effort they would have to do in order to make catalytic converters out of something else. They do not want to do that. And so that means that this supply-demand squeeze should continue on. One thing that held the price of the metal back last year, by the way, and like you're probably looking at a chart saying that price wasn't held back at all. Well, it actually could have been a lot worse, except car sales tanked in China. So that actually meant that the price of palladium didn't run nearly as much as it could have. But car sales are cyclical, and coronavirus or not, car sales are probably going to go up in China this year. Probably not this month, but you know what I mean? Over the course of the year, car sales are expected to really ramp up in China, and that's going to put upward pressure on the price of palladium. So, you know, it is playable. I would wait for a pullback. At some point, Russia will release more palladium into the market. That'll be the pullback. That's the pullback you can buy. I'm not chasing anything in this market. But yes, it's a very interesting metal to watch right now.
Absolutely. One other metal that has, well, taken it on the chin, I think a lot due to these geopolitical issues or black swan events this month, has been copper. Copper was trending up above $2.80, and just in the last couple weeks, maybe even just a week, dropped the whole way down to about the $2.55 region. Are you seeing an opportunity here? And even longer, in a longer term sense, copper is still very much just range bound below about $3 down to about $2.50.
Yeah, I see an opportunity here. We have one copper pick and Supercycle investor that's working out quite well. It's an explorer, though. A producer might be really hard pressed by what's going on in copper now, with a dip down to $2.52, prices we haven't seen in many, many months. But on the bright side, this is near the bottom of its range. And most of its hysteria having to do with the coronavirus, and some people may bristle at that. Some people may think that the coronavirus is like really going to get much worse. And so apparently some of those people are copper traders, because they're thinking the way copper is priced now, it's being priced as if China's going to shut down. China's not going to shut down. And so I see this as a real sentiment driven move. And so I expect that once this starts to rally, that rally could be fast. So I'm looking for the next turn in copper, and I will buy that turn.
All right. Well, Sean, some interesting comments. Let's wrap it up with any other maybe stocks that you like that you could share with us. You've already shared a couple, but is there anything else on your radar that you'd like to outline here?
Well, I will be speaking at the Orlando Money Show next week on February 6th, and I'm actually running the cannabis track. So I'll be introducing people talking about cannabis all day long. So I'll share one of the picks that I'll be bringing there, and that's a company called Arcadia Biosciences, symbol RKDA in the U.S. And what's interesting about that is they genetically engineer hemp seeds. And one of the problems with growing hemp, as many hemp finders are discovering, is that hemp can become too hot. That's not temperature-wise. What that means is it has too much THC content in it. A large portion of the hemp grown in Arizona just had to be destroyed because it was too hot. It had too much THC. The seeds from Arcadia fix that. Because they are genetically designed, they only have a certain amount of THC, very, very little. And so if you're a hemp farmer, you want their seeds. Arcadia just announced their new sales numbers, and they were extraordinarily good. I think everybody's going to want their seeds. Now, this isn't cannabis, it's hemp, and I'm sure anybody who's interested in that market knows the difference. But I think that the way that cannabis stocks in general, we can also talk about hemp stocks, have been beaten down in the past year and a half has just been brutal. Some were beaten down for very good reasons, but a lot of babies were thrown out with the bathwater. And I think that you can find some extraordinary values in the cannabis space right now. And RKDA, which is Arcadia Biosciences, that's one that I think people should look at. And that's one I'll be speaking about when I speak at the Orlando Money Show on February 6th. And so what you have to look at is, I think, buying the indices. There's more than a few cannabis-focused ETFs right now. That's really not the way to go. But individual names can do very, very well. One more sign of a bottom in cannabis is two pot ETFs up in Canada just shot down. That's not the thing you see happen at a market top. That's the thing you see happen at a market bottom. And so for sentiment reasons, fundamental reasons, whatever you want to look at, I think people should look at those companies which might not be turning a profit now, but are close to turning a profit and have a clear runway to turning a profit. In that industry, I think they can do extraordinarily well.
All right, Sean, we're going to wrap it up there. I do appreciate all of your comments, and I look forward to chatting with you in another couple weeks. Everybody stick around. I'm going to be right back with an update from Great Bear Resources. Thanks for your time, Sean.